Every day, children fall victims to abuse, violence, and exploitation, experiencing physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. Some find themselves at the mercy of human traffickers who enslave them into a world of prostitution, domestic servitude, and bonded labor. On Breakout with BD on the BBS radio station 1, hosted by Demi Nelson, illuminates the clandestine world of child abuse and human trafficking, breaking the silence and becoming a voice to the millions of voiceless children in the world today.
Hello there. My name is Bidemi Nelson, and you're welcome to another exciting edition of Breakout with BD on the BBS Radio Station 1. Last week, we were discussing about the prevention of child sexual abuse. And as you know, it is commonly said that prevention is much, much better than cure. So I believe every responsible and reasonable parent would want to sit back and learn what they can do to ensure the safety of their children. And while we are through with that, and hopefully we can finish up with this discussion this week, we'll move on to the other segments of the show, and that is News on Breakout and Angels on a Mission. And I'm so, so excited to be bringing those segments of the show to you as well. And so let's hit off the show with the discourse about the prevention of child sexual abuse. We talked about two steps last week, and if you can remember, we talked about learning to understand the risk associated with child sexual abuse and how parents can minimize the opportunity for child sexual abuse by monitoring relationships and interactions between their children and other adults. And this week we're going to continue by moving on to the third step, and that is talking about child sexual abuse. And it says here, remember, we're still looking at the tips proffered by the website Darkness to Light. And it says here that children would often keep abuse a secret, but barriers can be broken down by talking openly about it. And I hope you remember, I think in the show before the last, where I reiterated that your communication lines must always be opened. You must ensure that you and your child have quality communication. And that is what this is talking about as well. Now, as a parent, you need to understand why children will rather keep sexual abuse a secret rather than talk about it. But instead of me to go into that part, which I believe we talked about last week, let's move on to another reason why it's important to talk about child sexual abuse, and how it's why it's also important to know how to go about it. And it says here that one of the things you can do as a parent in talking about sex and sexual abuse is understanding how children communicate. Children who disclose sexual abuse often tell a trusted adult other than a parent. For this reason, training for people who work with children is especially important. Children may tell the body parts that was touched, or tell you the parts of the incidents that happened. And if you respond negatively, or you begin to show emotional you're not able to keep your emotions intact, those children will shut down and refuse to tell you any other thing that might help you stop the abuse. So it's important that you learn how to communicate as a parent, especially when you are dealing with a victim, with a child victim of sexual abuse. Now, it moves on to another part of talking, and it says, talk openly with your child. And it starts by saying here that good communication may decrease a child's vulnerability to sexual abuse and increase the likelihood that the child will tell you if abuse has occurred. Teach your children about their bodies, about what abuse is, and when age appropriate, teach your children about sex. Teach them words that help them discuss sex comfortably with you. Model caring for your own body and teach children how to care for theirs. My dear friend Tim Lennon, some information that he sent to me, he put it this way: teaching children to respect their bodies. In fact, it goes on to say here that part of the lessons of respect for their bodies would include teaching children that it is against the rules for adults to act in a sexual way with them. And as a parent, you must use examples. You must show them, give them instances and show examples of how an adult may act with them in a sexual manner. You need to teach your children which parts of their bodies adults and other kids shouldn't be touching. Now, you must remember to mention that the abuser might be an adult friend, a family member, or an older child. Teach your children not to give out their email addresses, home addresses, or phone numbers while using the internet. Start early and talk often. Use everyday opportunities to talk about sexual abuse. Be proactive. If a child seems uncomfortable or resistant to being with a particular adult, then you should probe further. I think every responsible adult should do this. And that is for this part about talking openly with your child. And then it moves on to talking to other adults about child sexual abuse. And I think it's important that when you have information that can empower you to protect your child better from sexual predators, it's important that you pass the message across to other parents who will as well be able to protect their children better because they are more empowered. And how do you do this? You need to support and encourage mutual learning when you share child sexual abuse experiences, instances, or information with another adult. You could try to raise the consciousness of your community and influence their choices about child safety. So this is all of is talking about you being proactive in this matter, being proactive in this regard. So you don't have to wait for something to happen and then you react, but you are taking the step to prevent the occurrence of an ugly situation. And you might find that at the end of the day, you may be offering support and information to an adult whose child is experiencing abuse and may not know what to do about it or how to stop the abuse. You also put potential abusers and even existing abusers on notice that you know about the issue of child sexual abuse and you are paying attention to it by talking about it, by sharing information about it, by encouraging every other person within your community to learn about it. And that's that on the aspect of talking openly about child sexual abuse. I'll be right back after this break. Do not go anywhere. Welcome back to the show. We're going to move on to the next step in the prevention tips of child sexual abuse. And step four is saying, stay alert. Please, we talked about this in the disclosure of child sexual abuse, where we looked at the signs that children will often exhibit if they have been abused. So we're not going to go over that this particular step. We'll move on to the next. But please don't forget to be observant as a parent. For God's sakes, that's your job. You need to know what's happening. Look at what you are seeing. What's happening to your child physically? Look at the body of your child. Is it bruised? Are there bite marks? Is there any sign of redness, rashes, swelling in the genitalia, the urinary tract? Are you having infections there? Or are there other symptoms that should be carefully investigated? Also check out the emotional and behavioral signals in your child. When you have a child who is overly compliant with rules and regulations, to a child who is often keeping to him or herself and suffering from unexplainable depression, to someone who is always angry and rebellious, you need to find out that something is definitely happening there. And when you have a child who often uses sexual languages that are not age appropriate, or is beginning to exhibit some funny sexual behaviors, or playing some disturbing sexual games that are not age appropriate, please probe further. Don't just turn a blind eye. That's what every reasonable parent should do. And so we are moving away from this step and we're moving on to step five, where it says, make a plan. As a parent, if you get to hear about sexual abuse of your child, you should know where to go, whom to call, and how to react. It's very important. It says, don't overreact, and that is key. And I think we have looked at that in the disclosure of child sexual abuse. Now it's also saying here that if your child discloses sexual abuse to you, please do not overreact to that disclosure. Because if you do, your child will shut down and not tell you any other thing. Your child may change his or her story in the face of your anger and disbelief, when in fact abuse is actually occurring. Your child may change the account around your questions so future tellings appear to be coached. And this can be very harmful if the case goes to court. So we have here where the child begins to tell you lies. You're asking questions about the specifics of what has happened, but because you have not been able to check your emotions, your child is beginning to tell lies about what happened. And then you make the child even feel much more guiltier than he or she had felt in the past. All right, it also goes further to say that parents must offer their support. And I think we've talked about all of this too. And parents also must know, and everybody should know as a matter of fact, that child sexual abuse is a crime and should be reported to the necessary authorities. It should not be swept under the carpet. Please, let us sit up and do what is right and end this unnecessary societal menace that has ravaged our societies and made our world unsafe for our children. And we are moving on to step 6, which says you must act on suspicions of child sexual abuse because the future well-being of that child is at stake. Now, many of those who sexually abuse children have multiple victims. You may be faced with a situation where you as a parent or caregiver suspect abuse but don't have any proof. Suspicions are scary, but please trust your instincts. Have the courage to report the suspected abuse. And if you remember when I brought my guest onto the show, Tim Lennon, and he said that when you have suspicions, the best thing to do is to report them to the authorities. It is key we remember this and do what is right when we begin to feel that something is going on, but we can't place a finger on it. Now, there's a question here, and it's usually a regular question, and it goes like this. What if I'm not sure? Where do I go? Now, depending on your country, we always have law enforcement agencies, and specifically, we have the police. In the United States, it's better, but in developing countries, it's a little different, and it you don't really have specialized services available for these kinds of scenarios. But wherever you are, always remember to call the police and call the social worker. Do not sweep this case under the carpet, and do not be intimidated not to do or seek help or not to do anything about it. And that's that about step 6, and we move on to step 7, which says get involved. And I just love this aspect of getting involved, because if you do something to help safeguard your child and you move on to spread the message to another parent, you are safeguarding the lives of many other children. Now it says here that You could try to volunteer and financially support organizations that fight the tragedy of child sexual abuse. And the usual question we get here is, what can I do to help the children in my community? Now, they advised here that you can get involved by donating your time and resources to support organizations that fight child sexual abuse. And they also advise here that you can use your voice and your vote to make your community a safer place for children. Now he says you can do this by asking that schools and organizations in your community have child sexual abuse prevention policies and help with their creation if they don't have any in place yet. They need to ask other adults to do the same. And that is very, very important. And then you must support legislation that protects children. You must try and demand that the government put some more resources into protecting children from sexual abuse and into responding to reports and allegations of sexual abuse. You can also call and write your members of Congress, and you can write letters to your newspapers, probably to your local newspapers. Please break the cycle of silence, and you can do that by doing the things that we have said here today, by getting involved. Even if child sexual abuse is not part of your history, is not part of it probably has never happened in your family, do not keep silent about it because you feel it's none of your business. Do not act like, you know, why should you give a damn because it's not happening to you. You can be a part in ending the menace of child sexual abuse by playing an active role in breaking the cycle of silence, by actively participating in sharing information and using your rights to make your community and your country safer for children. And that's the much we can take at this point. I have to go on break again, but I'll be right back. Don't you go anywhere. Breakout with BD on the BBS radio station 1. So far, so good. We have been looking at the prevention of child sexual abuse, and it is my hope and intent that parents and caregivers would learn a thing or two in ensuring the safety of their children, especially from sexual predators. Now, summarily, all I have been talking about to you for the past 2 weeks now can be put into 10 points. The first point is, remember, the person who abuses a child is to blame for the abuse and not the child. So for those parents who like to shift the blame or make the child feel bad because abuse has taken place and that child unfortunately is the victim, what you are doing is wrong, is bad, and very, very insensitive. Please stop that behavior. We have learned on the show the steps to take if sexual abuse does take place, and I expect that every parent and caregiver out there will make the needed and necessary changes. The second point is, always know the people who care for your children, including their names, phone numbers, and addresses. This is very, very important. These people are caring for your children, for God's sakes. You need to have accurate information about them. The next point is, be actively involved and always carefully supervise your child's activities. Whether at home or at school, you must be actively involved in the life of your child. Oh, for those career parents out there, I don't know what to say to you, but please, your children also are your careers. It's not just your jobs, but child rearing is a career as well that demands time, that demands attention, and that demands sacrifice. So give it those things that it demands so that at the end of the day, your children will not be messed up. Be actively involved in the life of your child. Carefully supervise your child's activities within the home and outside the home. Point number 4, be sensitive to changes in your child's behavior or attitude, paying close attention to your intuition, and I'm talking about your suspicions indicating that something isn't quite right. So if you're having suspicions that something is not going on the way it should be going, as a parent, you have the right to take actions on those suspicions. And that action specifically is to report it to the authorities and also to ask your child certain questions so that he can give you information about what is happening to him or her. You need to teach your child to listen to his or her intuition as well, or to listen to his or her gut feeling and communicate it to you. So if something is going on in the life of your child and your child is not too cool with it, you should open those lines of communication so that your child can communicate with you and share his fears and concerns with you. Point number 6 now. When your child tells you that they don't like someone, ask them to tell you why and listen carefully. So as a parent, you must also be observant. If your child doesn't like a particular person, you should be curious to know why. And open those lines of communication so that your child will be able to pour it all out to you, and you need to listen. Guys, it's important we develop the skills of listening without interrupting, without asking unnecessary questions. So please open the lines of communication and listen as well. Point number 7, teach your child that it's okay to tell no matter who, no matter what. And what I'm saying here is, teach your child that it's totally acceptable to disclose sexual abuse, no matter who the abuser is, no matter what form the abuse has taken. Ensure that things like shame is kicked out of the scenario. Let your child feel comfortable with you. Let him feel, he or she, let them feel comfortable in sharing experiences or sharing their thoughts and feelings with you. That's how to get the communication started. And I will move to point number 8, and it says, talk about safety and sex with your child using proper names for genitals. And I remember on the show, I keep talking about a particular man that was talking to his son, and who keeps calling his son's penis Jack Robinson. I tell you guys, it's wrong to give a wrong nomenclature to the body parts of your child. Let them know the right names for their body parts. It's totally normal, it's totally acceptable, and it's not offensive. And you also need to talk about safety with your child. We're talking about that today. What can a child do to ensure that he also plays an active part in ensuring his safety within and outside the home? And also, you must talk about sex with your children. Safety and sex. The two of them must be discussed at home with your children. I keep saying it and I won't stop saying it. Sex education is important in our homes. Every child has a right to sex education. Do not deprive your child of it. And we move on to point number 9 that says, supervise and establish clear rules and guidelines for your child's computer use. And guys, this cannot be overemphasized. We keep saying that predators are on a prowl looking for innocent victims to damage. You can't afford to just let your children stay on the internet and use it unsupervised. Even an article, I think I stumbled upon that article in the Awake Journal. It says if you want to really monitor and carefully supervise how your child uses the internet, then you should place the computer in the living room, right where everybody can see what is happening on the internet, so every adult is able to participate and even advise the child while he or she is using the internet. But remember, supervision and the establishment of clear rules and guidelines does not end only with the internet and computer use. It also extends into the mobile phone use. I talked about sexting, S-E-X-T-I-N-G, which has become a societal menace, especially in advanced countries today. We need to teach our children and we need to monitor how our children use their mobile phones. We need to be sure that our children are using their mobile phones the way it should be used. We need to be sure that no sexual predator has access to our children via their mobile phones. So please keep tabs on the friends and the contacts on your child's mobile phone. It's also very, very important. And parents, this is the last point, and that is point number 10. You need to educate yourself. You need to read far and wide. You need to listen to your children and listen to other children and also listen to other adults out there. And you need to ask questions when you are not sure about what you are hearing or the information that you are getting. And it's also important that, as parents, don't be outdated. You can't afford to be outdated. You need to know how to use a computer. You need to know how to do things that children of this age are doing. And even if you can't do it, at least have some information about it. That certainly cannot be overemphasized. And that is the summary about the prevention of child sexual abuse. And basically, I hope parents out there have learned a thing or two on what they can do to keep their children safe. And before we end this whole discourse about the prevention of child sexual abuse, I just want us to look at one other thing, and that is the healthy sexual development of children. And basically, I want us to look at the tips for facilitating healthy sexual development in children. Now, the first thing that you should do as a parent is to respect your child's need for privacy. And this really should start by the time your child is probably 2 years of age. Let your child understand that he or she has a right to privacy, for instance, during toileting or during bathing. So let the child understand that he or she has the right to privacy, his or her own privacy, and also should respect the need for other people's privacy as well. And the second thing is you need to be clear with your child about respect for other people's boundaries and also their need for privacy, which was what I mentioned earlier. Now, as you are respecting your child's need for privacy, your child needs to respect other people's need for privacy and also respect other people's boundaries. So you have to instill that in your child. Now, the third thing is you need to talk to your child about bodily responses, especially those that are precursors to sexual responses. For instance, it feels good usually to touch one's body, but you need to let your child know what is appropriate about touching and what is not, and especially during peer interaction. You know, what is right touching and what is not right, you know, about touching. Those are things that should be taught, you know, to a child at home. Now, the fourth thing is you need to model healthy, intimate adult relationships, and you start this by effective communication. And let me tell you the truth, guys. Your child may not have an idea of what a normal adult-child relationship should be, except you show it to them. So by the time you are communicating with your child through words, through gestures, through your behavior, they can understand what a healthy adult relationship should be like and what they should do if that interaction or relationship is moving out of the normalcy or moving out of what is termed to be normal, what they can do. And like I said, they need to tell you about it if somebody is trying to become sexual with them, especially if this person is an older child or an adult. Now, the next thing here is to teach your child about male and female puberty. And let's say you start doing this by the time they are between 7 to 8 years of age, because some children start puberty quite early. Now, the last thing is use everyday opportunities to teach your child about sexuality, even about the mechanics of reproduction. Children should know the birds and the bees by no later than 9 years of age. It's important that children should understand some details. I'm not saying every detail, but the age-appropriate information about sexuality and sex education. These things are vital so that your child is not ignorant of the devices of the sexual predator who definitely is out there. And that's that about the prevention tips of child sexual abuse and the tips for facilitating healthy sexual development. I'll be right back after this break, and when we come back, we are moving on to the other segments of the show. You're welcome to News on Breakout, and this week we are heading off to Vancouver in Canada, where we have this story that says sexting can lead to sexual abuse and child pornography. And this warning is coming from the police. And it says that the growing popularity of sexting among teenagers is a dangerous pastime which can be abused for sexual exploitation and blackmail. It can harm their future professional careers and legally incriminate them in charges of child pornography. This can affect the future of each of these girls as post-secondary institutions and employers often use the internet to help in the hiring process. And I'm sure you want to know why. Now, this 10 warning was issued to teenagers and their parents by the Prince George RCMP, which has noted a flaw in the electronic practice among teenagers of texting or emailing nude photos of themselves, sexually explicit messages and video via cell phones to their friends. Girls as young as 13 years of age are taking nude or near nude photos of themselves and sending them via emails, SMS texting or instant messenger, texting to male friends in their peer groups. Some photos may even show a sexual act, and all of these, as you have heard, can affect their future, especially during the hiring process. Now, sexting also contributes to the worldwide problem of child pornography. From a legal perspective, each photograph can be considered child pornography and individuals can be criminally charged, the Criminal Code of Canada, with possessing and distributing child pornography. Parents are also placed at risk of criminal charges if their child's phone is registered in their name. Now, sexting, they add, has also been a cause of teen suicides. They advise parents on how to deal with this problem by suggesting that they closely observe the following guidelines. Teach your children how to block unwanted correspondence. Keep webcams unplugged when not in use. Parents should also create an environment where their children feel safe and can talk about secrets, look for changes in their behaviors, and ask questions. Now, this is basically about what we have discussed earlier in the show. Parents should create that environment that children can feel safe and can communicate with their parents about secrets or questions or issues they are having both at school and at home. And parents should also look out for changes in the behaviors of their children and ask questions if need be. And this is coming straight from Vancouver in Canada. And I hope not just the parents in Canada now, but every parent that is listening to me today, we need to do something and we need to sit up as regards supervising our children's activities, their internet activities, and the use of their mobile phones. We talked about that earlier today, and I hope you make that right change. And then we move on to South Africa, where we have Desmond Tutu announces Children's Peace Prize nominees. And for those of us who don't know who Desmond Tutu is, this is a South African activist and a retired Anglican bishop who rose to worldwide fame during the 1980s as an opponent of apartheid. Now, Tutu is saying here that it is a very important prize because it facilitates a platform for children who make a valuable contribution to a peaceful world. Children are the future, but often they are not heard. The Children's Peace Prize gives a voice to the voiceless. Now, the five nominees for this year's prize, which launched in 2005, are Makela from South Africa, who is 17 years of age, and Makela was born with cerebral palsy, though she has limited function in her legs and her arms. She fights for the rights and the inclusion of children with disabilities in South Africa. The next nominee is Malala from Pakistan, who is 13 years, and Malala focuses on the right to education with a focus on education for girls, which was banned during the Taliban rule in Pakistan. Our next nominee, the third one at that, is Lisa from Palestine. And Lisa is 17 years and she uses sports to promote peace between Israeli and Palestinian youngsters and fights for the empowerment of Palestinian girls. The fourth nominee is Nicole from Armenia, and Nicole is 17 years, and Nicole organizes discussions and presentations on human rights and also shares his knowledge through his website and blog. Now, the last nominee is Winfred from Uganda, and Winfred is 14 years of age, and Winfred stands up for abused children and documents cases of violence against children in schools and communities. I always say that abuse, whether it's physical or sexual or neglect or emotional or verbal, whatever form it may take, is always a vicious cycle that cuts across every race, every class, every age, every sex, and I can go on and on and on. My next story is focused on Dog the Bounty Hunter, and here it says that Dog the Bounty Hunter gets custody of grandson after disturbing audio of abuse surfaces. And it says here that a judge has awarded custody, temporary custody now, of Travis Mimis, his 9-year-old grandson, to Dog the Bounty Hunter. And this incident took place after Travis's father was convicted of physically abusing his son. And it says here that you can hear the child begging for his father to stop. And according to Chapman, that is Dog the Bounty Hunter Chapman, the boy, his grandson Travis now, was hit at least 13 times in that particular incident. The boy's mother, Barbara Cathy Chapman, died in a motor accident in 2006. Now, Doug has made it clear that he doesn't want permanent custody of his grandson, and he would like Travis Sr., which is his son, to receive treatment for his anger and be reunited with his son. And Chapman explained this to the Star magazine, and he said that this was his hopes for his family. He quotes, "I don't want to take my grandson's dad away from him. I want him, Travis Sr., that is his son, to take parenting classes. We had to get Travis Jr., that is his grandson, out of that situation." And he says also that he, and I'm talking about Doug the Bounty Hunter, he says here that he was beaten by his father, and he admits that they have to break that cycle of abuse. So guys, I always say it and I won't stop saying it. Abuse begets abuse, but somebody can make the decision to stop it and nip it at the bud. Now, our next story is coming straight from Halloween. And you guys out there who are in the mood and in the spirit for Halloween, well, you need to listen to this. The candies that you get in Halloween, have you ever wondered where they come from? Well, if you don't, I have a surprising story from you from Ivory Coast. About half of the chocolate eaten in the U.S. comes from Ivory Coast, where documented instances of forced child labor on cocoa farms persist despite a decade of pressure on cocoa companies to implement better oversight. And because corporations have been recently found to be exploiting workers, even some of them in the U.S., some of them even manufacture their products using cocoa beans from all over the world that gets mixed together, it's highly likely that any chocolate bar you unwrap is made with at least some cocoa grown by underage workers with little or with nothing in terms of compensation. Now, the U.S. State Department estimated that 100,000 children work in Ivory Coast cocoa farms, and 10,000 of those could be victims of trafficking or enslavement. And this is a really sad story. Now, he says that this is an issue of human trafficking and modern day slavery. So as you unwrap those chocolate bars in Halloween, think back to the source of those chocolates. Remember that some of them actually are being produced by underage workers who are into forced labor or bonded labor. And I tell you guys, you can be a part of that cycle of ending modern day slavery and human trafficking if you just do a little into finding out the source of the chocolates that you consume in Halloween. And that's that for news on Breakout. And we're going to be moving to our last segment of the show, and that is Angels on a Mission. And today I'm so excited to bring you this segment because there is something really, really interesting for you to learn on the show today. And basically, I'm taking you right back to Panama, where a woman shares her story of child abuse and domestic violence. And this woman, her name is Jenny Byrons, and she's an artist. Her paintings and sculptures fill the home she now shares with her adoring husband. But life wasn't always so good for her. Jenny faced severe sexual, physical, and emotional abuse as a child at the hands of her father and stepmother. Her father was allowed to do anything he wanted to do. Usually, a woman tempers a man or quiets a man who is violent. But for Jenny, there was no stop. Having faced such horrors as a child, she says she didn't have a healthy foundation with which to make good decisions as an adult. The man she married nearly strangled her to death. She quotes, "I fell to the floor, and when I came to, he was shaking me and said, 'Now look what you did. You almost made me hurt you. But now that you are not hurt, well, that's good news.' And from then on, eventually," she said, "she knew if she stayed on with him, he would kill her." The two eventually divorced. Jenny says he took her years to finally understand she was worthy of love, and that's why she's sharing her story in her book, The Eyes Have It. She wants other victims of abuse to know that they matter. You are not a victim anymore once you have made it out, she quotes. You are not a victim, and what you choose for the rest of your life is your choice, and you don't have to accept second best. Her books are available at Book by the Sea and on Amazon.com. Jenny will be sharing more of her story at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church at 1608 Baker Court Wednesday night at 6. And that was yesterday. I want to thank you, Jenny, for this work you are doing on creating awareness on spousal abuse. I hope I got the pronunciation of your name right, but the essence of this is just to celebrate and create awareness about the work of people in ending abuse in the world today. If we can tame spousal abuse, we can tame any form of abuse. And that's that on our show for today. I'd like to thank you very much for listening in, and I'd like to tell you that the world can be a safer place. It's a reality that can actually be something that we all can benefit from if we make a decision to stand up for it and to make the right sacrifices to see all of this come to be. I'll catch you guys next week, and until then, remember, do what is right. Be part of the change that is fair. It's all in the best interest of the child out there. I love you, and God bless you.